Hello, this is David E. from CKMS FM 102.7 Radio Waterloo. Today we have Ayman Fanous joining us for an interview. He is a jazz guitarist and improviser. His most recent record was just released a few months ago in April. Thank you for joining, and I hope you enjoy.
Hear me. I just turned the video off for a second to see if transmission is okay. Better.
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Yeah, it's just that I'm on a university campus and then the Wi-Fi might not be the best, so safety.
Bonnie University too, as a matter of fact.
Right. Are you teaching in a university or?
I do. I'm actually the chair of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Arizona. So I do teach.
Cool.
I do. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, Richard's email mentioned that you have a background in psychiatry. Wasn't it? You're a professor.
Yeah, I'm an academic.
So that's actually your main gig. And do you music on the side, or is that like a career? Do you consider it a career for you as well, or?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I consider it, you know, as important as music, as, you know, my work in psychiatry and mental health research. It's important to me, but I don't think of it as a job so much as really more of a sort of a practice, almost like a spiritual practice, like something that I have to do. Like a lot of other musicians, you know, you'll find a way of doing it one way or another, and it's almost more important than the career. To be honest, I don't think of it as a way of making money. Well, first of all, I couldn't make money doing it. It's actually freed me up to not have to worry about money and music, to be able to make the kind of music that I want, to play with who I want, and not worry about whether it's going to make any money or not. So it's actually been good in that regard.
It's the kind of I do it to keep me sane kind of situation.
Yeah, I mean, if you talk to a lot of musicians, you know, if they didn't do music, they wouldn't quite feel like themselves, and it's something that you kind of have to express yourself. It's not a hobby or anything like that. I mean, there are people who play music as a hobby, or paint, or write poetry as a hobby, but in this case, you know, if I didn't do it, yes, I absolutely would go nuts.
Right. Yeah. I'm in sort of the same boat, by the way. My laptop video, like the webcam's not working. That's why I don't have it on. Like, it seems to be transmitting fine now, but it's just, yeah, it's not working. So sorry about that.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I was saying, like, I'm kind of in the same boat as well. Like when I graduated high school and then I was trying to pick a university, and then I just ended up going with a music department instead of anything else, like any science or whatever, because I just couldn't really see myself doing that. So, yeah.
What do you play?
For undergrad, I'm a piano major.
Oh, cool.
And then throughout the years, I kind of slowly transitioned to more composition, production, recording, like the techier side of things as well. That's kind of like my background. But like classical piano training, I started since when I was 5 and then kept going until high school. So. What's your background like? Like before, did you grow up with musical training, or did you?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. So I don't come from a musical family. I mean, nobody in my either immediate family or extended family really played an instrument. My parents listened to music at home, and my parents saw the value of playing music. So actually, they started me out in violin lessons when I was in elementary school. Starting at age 7. So I took lessons from age 7 to age 11, 10, 11-ish. And I have to tell you, I was a pretty lousy student.
Classical training as well? Or?
It was, it was traditional sort of like public school, public elementary school lessons, that sort of 3 lessons a week. It never stuck with me. It just never worked out. I never got to play the instrument well, although I figured, you know, I learned how to move my fingers and things like that, which actually was very helpful when I picked up a guitar later when I was 12. So that's sort of my I was basically, you could say, a failed violin, you know, classical violin student, although I can't say I didn't really try very much either. So, but yeah, that's my background. I eventually found a guitar, and around, my story is like 1981, John Lennon died. I had never heard of the Beatles, never heard of John Lennon, never seen anyone actually play the guitar. And all of a sudden, you had 24/7 Beatles coverage. And, you know, there was footage of the Beatles on TV all the time playing guitar. Mm-hmm. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. It was like, you know, where did this all come from? This is something that I sort of, it's almost like I've been waiting for this to happen, you know. And picked up a guitar, started fooling around with it, and really have been mostly self-taught in the guitar sort of arena. And then sort of, you know, went from one influence to the other over a course of decades, and that's kind of still where I am, basically.
So is guitar your main instrument?
Yeah, so guitar is my main instrument. I picked up the bouzouki, the Greek bouzouki, I'd say about 1995-ish or so, and it was just pure happenstance that a friend of mine happened to have one. He brought it over, and it was pretty easy to play. I mean, if you had guitar technique, you could play the bouzouki. Very similar, but it sounded very different. You know, the double strings and the bouzouki, you know, had this sound that was very Eastern sounding. And I resonated with it very quickly. And I started improvising on the bouzouki, kind of figured out my own sort of ways of improvising. I don't really play the traditional Greek approach to playing the bouzouki, although Greece isn't the only country, believe it or not, that plays the bouzouki. Of course, the Greek bouzouki, as we know it, has a counterpart in Lebanon and Syria, the Arabic bouzouki, which is very similar. It plays, it's able to play quarter tones. So that's kind of...
Oh, okay, yeah.
And there's a few pretty good bouzouki players, you know, Arabic bouzouki players that have been, you know, recorded, and you can find their recordings online and stuff like that. So that's my story with the bouzouki. But mostly it's been the guitar. I mean, yeah, the guitar has been my predominant instrument. You know, started out playing electric, the Stratocaster, because Hendrix was my big hero back in the day. And then I discovered the acoustic guitar, the nylon string guitar, which then became my sole instrument for many years. All I did was playing classical and flamenco style guitar. And then I sort of had a couple of periods of time where I rediscovered the electric. And most recently that happened in 2014-ish or so, when I picked up the Paul Reed Smith, which is a very different type of guitar than the Stratocaster in terms of how it feels.
So an electric? I play a PRS as well.
Yeah, okay, so you understand that. So the PRS has a very different feel than the Stratocaster. It's got a wider neck, it's got a lower action, and I could find that I could much more easily sort of transfer my classical and flamenco guitar technique to the PRS than I could to the Stratocaster.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I've been playing playing the PRS, really, that's been my sole electric instrument since about 2000. Mm-hmm. I still play, of course, the nylon string, sort of half and half at this point.
Right, nice. And our station kind of labeled your music as jazz/experimental. Like, would you fully agree with that? Or, like, do you have a more specific label you would put on your music?
Well, you know, as with most musicians, you know, labels are very limited. I'd say that's more or less accurate. You know, like, what is, obviously, the question always comes up as to what is jazz? You know, why is one thing jazz and something else isn't jazz? And I don't really have a great answer to that. You know, jazz in general is music that I would say is connected somehow to the music of the African diaspora of the United States, you know, starting out with blues and then developing into jazz. And that music was expressed in a certain type of orchestration, including saxophones, guitars, trumpets, and things like that. And sort of music that has an outgrowth from that, I would generally call jazz if it's improvised, if there's improvisation involved. Although I guess not all jazz is improvised. I mean, there are parts in many jazz compositions, of course. And so I would say, you know, I do have a strong connection to that tradition, and that comes mostly out of my connection through to the free jazz tradition that Ornette Coleman sort of established back in the late 50s. You know, one of the most important touchstone sort of experiences in my musical life has been my duo with the guitarist Bernd Nix, who was the guitarist in the Coleman Prime Time back in, I think, you know, mid 70s to about late 80s, I'd say. We played on many of the Prime Time albums. And my work with him as in a duo has been very influential. We played in a duo together from about 95 until, you know, sort of on and off until his death. He died a few years ago, unfortunately. So that is really, I would say, where I come in as far as, you know, the jazz tradition is concerned. You know, specifically the harmelodic or free jazz tradition. But, you know, in terms of influence, I've got lots of other jazz influences outside of the harmelodic or free jazz playing. You know, Coltrane is a big one. You know, most of my jazz influences are in the sort of, you know, out sort of, you know, free-ish jazz sort of realm, including people like Eric Dolphy was a big influence. You know, obviously a lot of the jazz fusion guitarists early on were big influences, which led me to the traditional jazz guitar, like Wes Montgomery, people like that. Right. McLaughlin, those folks, Pat Metheny, in the very early days of my playing, were very big influences.
And do you compose your music? Like, do you call yourself a composer, or are you more of a performer?
I am definitely more of an improviser. So, I mean, in the world of jazz, you know, you can have purely improvised music, or you can have, you know, improvised music that's based on, you know, tunes, heads, so on and so forth. I don't really do that very much. You know, I don't get involved in a lot of sort of tune based or sort of melodic, you know, harmonic progression based stuff. I tend to much more in the sort of open end of things, where again, but this big touchstone for me is Ornette Coleman, Cecil Taylor, that sort of school of thought, where it's pretty much improvised. Although, of course, Ornette had tunes as well, but so I would say I would definitely be in the sort of like improvised end of things. I don't compose per se, although, you know, again, you know, what is improvisation? I mean, some would say that improvisation is essentially fast composition without writing down the music, and consequently not being able to play it again.
Heard it's like the other way, but like really similar, as in a composition is improvisation, except after you improvise, you write it down.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, they're really the same thing in a sense. The only thing that differentiates them is whether it's written down or not.
So do you like perform live?
Oh, yeah.
Or are you more of a studio?
No, I absolutely performer. Live. I mean, that's to me, that's the heart of where it is. I mean, have, you know, collective improvisation is really a sort of go for. I mean, we have multiple people improvising together and having an audience. Having an audience is really important to me, because you have someone that you're expressing to, that you're speaking to. And there's this two-way, you know, relationship. There's this very strong bi-directional relationship with the audience. I mean, that, you know, you feed off their energy, they feed off your energy. It's very symbiotic. It's really a beautiful thing when you can have this sort of connection with an audience. So it's really important to play for an audience, to me.
I find it makes a huge difference, especially when it comes to improvised music. Because in a studio, you're more or less listening to yourself and yourself only. And then, that could be me talking, like, from a studio musician standpoint, as in, like, when I'm playing just in a studio into a computer, and then I get, like, very self-critical. And it'd be like, oh, that wasn't good, this and that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when you have an audience, you're actually speaking to someone in a way and conveying a message to someone. And you want to be able to make that person, you know, feel something, to inspire them somehow, to excite them, to make them feel some kind of range of emotions. And yeah, I mean, that makes a big difference to me. And you can't really be worried about, you know, did I play the wrong note or did I play the right note? Because oftentimes, you know, what's the right note to you may not be the right note to the person listening and vice versa. Not view your mistake as what you think is a mistake is a mistake. You might actually sound pretty okay to them. And something that you might think sounds good may not be that inspiring to them. So you can't really worry too much. Other than you just kind of have to do your best and play as sincerely as possible without putting on airs, without trying to sound a certain way, just really being as true to your own musical self as possible.
Yeah.
I do some free improv too. Like most of the time, I consider myself a composer and producer. That's like the majority of my own work. But then in my master's program, in the very first term, we actually spent the whole term. There's one course that we took, and the whole term we were just the whole cohort just do like different kinds of free improv exercises together. How should I say this? Like when you are improvising, what do you really think about to, like, you know, lead you to whatever that you're playing? Like, do you have a process?
That's a very good question. You know, I imagine people have different methodologies, but what I hear from a lot of other musicians, a lot of truly great producers, like John McLaughlin, will say, you know, you pretty much work and practice and practice scales and do exercises and learn chords and things like that. But once you're on stage doing it, doing improvisation, you kind of can't really be thinking about that stuff because it's going very fast. The process, especially when you're improvising with multiple people, I mean, the process of ideas being sort of passed back and forth between people is so fast that you can't really be analyzing it too much. You have very little time. You have milliseconds to sort of conceptualize something and respond to someone. And if you think about it too much, you're not going to be able to stay in the flow. You just don't have the luxury of time, essentially. So, you know, the way I approach it is, like, I have certain, there are certain sounds, there are certain sort of harmonic sort of flavors that I like, and I'll start out by throwing some of those out to my co-improvisers. I improvise with a lot of single note sort of instrument improvisers, you know, violinists, cellists, contrabass, woodwinds, and things like that. I'm the one who's playing harmony instrument, kind of like the piano, in a way. You know, it's not as complex, of course, as the piano, but the guitar is another, it's a harmony instrument. So I tend to play, I'm the one sort of who has sort of the responsibility for the harmonic sort of flavor of the improvisation. The harmonic structure, if you will, it's not necessarily a very tight structure necessarily, or a very set in stone type structure. But there's always structure of some kind, whether you like it or not, whether you are trying to have structure or not. There's always some kind of structure. Mm-hmm. So you know, you're responsible for that as the guitarist, or I am as the guitarist, and I really enjoy seeing and hearing what a lot of these master improvisers who play these more single note singing instruments can do. And what they come up with is often really beautiful. And so I'll start usually because I'm the harmonic sort of creator in a sense. I'll start out with throwing out some harmonies and seeing what happens from there in their improvisations, and it'll feed back to me, and it will sort of just feed back and forth to each other. Really wonderful process. It's a beautiful process. It's a beautiful experience when it's working right, and usually it does, you know, when you're playing with great musicians.
Yeah, our cohort, like, after that whole term of improv, we actually talked about like doing like recording a set of pieces that are just us improvising, but then it never actually happened. So maybe I should bring it up to them again.
That's what my recordings are, essentially. They're recordings of improvisations.
Are they like live recording or a studio recording?
I have a range. So I have, there are four CDs that I have currently studio recordings. And then I had five
CDs that you mentioned last?
yeah, the 5 CD box set and stories that I released a couple of months ago, that's all live. So live.
So like all of the Brooklyn stories sets are live.
Right.
Oh, nice.
I mean, they were often small audiences, but still, definitely there were at least a few people in the room. And, you know, there were performances. There were not studio recordings, per se.
Were they meant to be performances? Or are you familiar with Snarky Puppy? Because they do, like, album recording sessions, but then they have, like, groups, a whole group of audience in the middle.
Right? Well, I guess
is it more of, like, that setting, or...?
Very much so. I would say that is probably as close to what I do.
And with how many Brooklyn stories are there? 5, right? Right. And they're all under the name Brooklyn Stories. Is that because they're all done within the same time period? Or was there like a theme there you're going after?
Well, there are most of them. So I would say, let's see, four of the 5 CDs were recorded in Brooklyn, a place called the Firehouse Space. Another CD was recorded in Richmond, Virginia. But, you know, the folks I recorded with there, you know, William Parker, Richard Suya Nakatani, they were based in New York City at the time. And so, you know, it was still fitting. So Brooklyn Stories is 5 CDs, 4 of which were recorded in Brooklyn over the course of a 2-day sort of residency that I had back in 2015.
2-day, wow.
Yeah.
So that's where the name came from.
Yeah.
Mostly just the recording location.
Yes.
Oh, I see. I checked out some of them. I did not listen to all of them. I did not have the time. But would you say your style of free improv would be challenging to listeners?
Well, I'll put it this way. I mean, if it wasn't somewhat challenging to listeners, I would consider it to some degree to be a failure, because I think it's really
important. That's true.
Challenge for, you know, whatever music it is that you're playing, whether it's, you know, very scale and traditional harmony based music, or whether it's dissonant and complex. I mean, you should be challenging the listener some by providing them really with something new that they would not have been able to put together themselves, that they would not have been able to sort of predict. And so I would consider it challenging to some degree, but is it so dissonant and so difficult to process that it leaves the listener sort of shocked, stunned, shell-shocked? I don't think so. I think it can actually be, you know, a lot of it is actually quite engaging. And, you know, even the music that is relatively dissonant within this, you know, within the 4 CDs, I think is quite... I think it's quite engaging, especially if you listen to the interaction between the musicians, because there's a conversation going on. And once you can sort of engage with that conversation, listen to it, see what's going on, you know, it's something that you can sort of, you know, so you can certainly grab hold of and grab your attention, and you can go with it and, you know, follow the story where it goes. You know, outside of the dissonant pieces in this recording session, there are also some very melodic pieces, you know, especially the ones with the bouzouki. You know, I tend to use a lot of Middle Eastern sonic scales, which are often in the sort of the minor spectrum of things. And we use drones oftentimes, and, you know, that music can actually be very melodic and sometimes very melancholic. And so I would not consider that really challenging in any real way. Since again, it's not predictable, but it, you know, it presents the listener with something they can sort of relate to in terms of having, you know, minor scales, things like that, which you don't find in the more dissonant pieces.
Right. Yeah, I did pick up on the Middle Eastern influences on some of the pieces. Those were really cool.
Thank you.
I asked that question, I guess, mainly to see, because some free improviser, they really push for the either the dissonance or like pushing for, you know, creating unusual sounds from the instruments and that sort of things. So like there's certainly a range even within like fully improvised music, right? When did Brooklyn Stories release?
It was released April 28th.
Right, nice. And are you currently exploring anything else, or like is there a next project that you're working on?
Well, it's interesting that you asked that, because Brooklyn Stories, you know, it's a five CD book set. We actually were originally working on a 10 CD book set, but we decided to break it up into 2 5 CD book sets. So there's going to be another 5 CD book set coming closer to the end of 2026. And I've actually got probably a couple of dozen CDs worth of music that I've been sort of amassing over the years, and I'm eventually going to release them all in either, you know, 5 CD box sets or larger formats. And so I'm basically getting ready to, you know, get the manufacturing process going soon. It's already been mixed and mastered. So yeah, there's a CD box set coming out closer to the end of 2026, and hopefully much more. So I've been amassing this music for many years, not really releasing very much, but amassing recordings. And now I'm really going to focus on getting music out there, because I think it's really about time that I get it out there and you know, get it heard and listened to, and just see how it affects people.
And do you see yourself working with vocalists or whatever, like anytime soon?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's definitely one thing I'm very eager to explore. I mean, there's a number of vocalists out there that I'm a fan of, improvisational vocalists. And that will be for hopefully a soon future state of exploration. Yeah, I'm very interested in doing that, you know, either with text or without text.
Very nice. Yeah, so we're running out of time, so I think I'll cut the interview short here. Again, apologies for the camera thing. I know, like, when you're doing an interview, like, being able to see the other person typically helps a lot, actually. But yeah, like, really nice to meet you, and it's really insightful hearing about your process and everything.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your interest. Good luck with both the series and with your career, and yeah, look forward to hearing more about your stuff and learning more about your work in the future.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Okay, well, take care. Have a great evening.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. Okay. All right, bye.